Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
You know, I always had a fantasy of being a superhero, and I thought, like, invisibility would be cool.
You're invisible.
Hold on.
It's,
you
I'm
always
like,
had
what?
A fantasy
like,
of being a superhero?
Yeah, as a kid.
Which
you
one?
Always thought, you know, you
which
always,
one did you want to be?
I've always felt like Batman didn't really have enough power. He had a lot of money.
Riddle me this, Batman.
Aquaman's pretty cool.
I've been itching all day for some action. Hey, let me know when the next meeting is. I gotta do some King of the Sea stuff.
Superman, the problem with Superman is kryptonite.
I told you. It's kryptonite, Superman. A little souvenir from the old hometown.
I think I wanted to be Flash because you could be anywhere, anytime.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
We're looked at as superheroes.
Let's go!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Wow, hadn't thought about the superhero conversation. That's interesting.
Morning, Mully. Happy Monday.
What's busy. Interesting is you know exactly what you want.
Well, I've thought about it a lot since being a kid. Yeah, the weekend certainly went by in a flash.
Wow.
And there was a lot of stuff going on, and there were all four teams in Chicago active yesterday, made for a full day of watching and being frustrated.
I got to tell you.
If you're a baseball
there
fan.
There was a beautiful moment during the day. I think the Sox were up 3-1. The Cubs were up like 7-3, and the Bulls were just putting the finishing touches on it. And I thought, the Chicago parlay is coming in again. We saw that happen once earlier in the year. It's going to happen again.
Sox and Ooh. Bulls, or the Blackhawks and the Bulls the won. The winter tenants of the United Center winners. The summer
the
occupants
teams.
Of the baseball parks in town,
Help.
Losers.
Yeah,
both lost in familiar fashion. Both lost with bad bullpens because of leads that were blown. And a frustrating day. On the north side, and a familiar one, unfortunately, for Sox fans because that bullpen has been disappointing. You know, Martin Perez was very good, 3-1 lead on the Tigers, and then it all fell apart. And the Cubs, wow. I feel bad about the Cubs because you come out of that series and they beat the Padres 2 out of 3, But you're left with a real frustrating feeling after beating the Padres 2 out of 3. And you don't want to be negative. You don't want to be down, and you don't want to be over. You don't want to overreact. But Ryan Pressly was shaky all weekend long.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought, as we talked about coming out of the big sweep, the 35-run sweep in Sacramento, we thought, well, this is, you know, step up in class. This is going to be more difficult. And then lo and behold, they're on their way to a sweep over the previously undefeated Padres. And you're feeling really good about it because we had kind of talked about, well, is the bullpen issue going to come back? Are we going to be dealing with that again? And not so much in the first two games. Really well-played, strong games. And then you get to that third game, and it was rough all the way around. Well, Ben Brown didn't have it early. You
Ben
fall
Brown
behind.
Really
then you come back.
All over the place.
Because the offense is so good these days.
They fell behind 3-0 early.
Yes.
They come back. The first inning lasted forever.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was going to be a four-hour game.
Looked like it.
And the Cubs lead 5-3 after one.
Come on.
They feel very good late, protecting a lead. And then the bullpen imploded again.
Yep.
Shaky. Too many walks.
Walks.
Too much of a lack of command.
Couple errors. Come on.
It's sloppy. Sloppy.
For the defense as good as theirs, what are you doing?
Well, Justin Turner playing first base in the ninth inning.
Great mystery.
We have to get back into that.
Mm-hmm.
That was not real logical. That was very frustrating. So he's got to catch that ball. He knows it. It's one thing to admit it, but I think if you knew it was that obvious, why you have to ask just as obviously why he was at first base in the ninth inning of a close game.
That's baseball, David. That's baseball.
Who said that?
That's Craig Counsell. I mean, did you hear his response?
Yeah.
Did you hear the response? Jesse Rogers asked Craig a question. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, with all due respect, I don't go into clubhouses and locker rooms very much anymore, and I definitely probably am not allowed to ask questions for obvious reasons. But you give the guy the answer to the question you're asking, and then he says yes. It was just, you know, so you want, Jesse said, so you wanted, you left Justin Turner in so that he could bat in the ninth, right? Yes. No. Why? Why didn't you leave Nico Horner in after you pinch hit him?
Michael Bush.
Michael Bush. He pinch hit Michael Bush and then still leaves Justin Turner in.
That's just baseball, unfortunately.
It
that
is baseball.
From yesterday, but thank you.
No. Yeah. And it wasn't a satisfying response. It was just the worst case scenario for the Cubs because that was the one thing that you wondered about when Bush came out of the game rather than replacing Turner at first base.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's the same adage. You put a weak infielder in the infield and the ball's going to
find
him.
Yeah.
And the ball found Justin Turner.
And it wasn't a great throw, but it was catchable.
It was catchable.
Yes. That wasn't the hardest throw I've ever seen. But the guy's a lifelong third baseman playing first base.
The usage of Michael Bush is very curious.
Why are you laughing? What's so funny about that?
Just the lifelong third baseman playing first base. You know, I mean, sure, the throw could have been, the throw definitely could have been better, but there's no reason, there's zero reason that the 40-year-old, unless there's an injury, should be playing first base at that point in time. They are in love. They love Michael Bush over there. They absolutely are.
Really?
They adore him.
Really?
They do.
Who?
Jed.
Who is they?
Jed and,
well,
Carter.
It's a very odd way of showing it,
isn't
let me
it?
Just say.
Isn't it? I think there, I still think there's something going on
there,
by the way.
They pinch hit for your cleanup hitter.
Again.
And I had this conversation Saturday, repeated it yesterday, talking with the baseball guy. If Michael Bush is your cleanup hitter, why are you pinch hitting for him? And if you're pinch hitting for him, why is he your cleanup hitter?
Right, that happened in the home opener, right? He got pinch hit for in the home opener.
What are you implying though when you say there's something going on?
I think there's
Counsell.
Yes,
and Jed
and
have
Jed
different
are not
opinions.
I don't think they're on the same page. I don't.
That's what you implied, but you didn't say it.
Absolutely.
Hmm. Well, Michael Bush is here, and if you're going to bat him fourth, let him be that guy. And I know that the lineup construction has changed over the years because of metrics and what we value and what we're looking for in cleanup hitters, but still, if he's batting fourth so he gets more at bats to bat, that's why you put guys in your order, then let him hit in key situations and keep him in games. He's not a platoon player. If he's a platoon player,
Yeah, I agree with
you. Don't bat him fourth.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's very strange that you – I really thought when he came in for the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not the case, and it should have been.
It ruined the day, ruined the arrival and the first home run of Kyle Tucker, King Tuck, all hail. And that was kind of a downer.
He is the co-leader in home runs in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And he leads them in RBIs.
With five. But that's still wild.
They've played more games, I think, so that's part of it. Two more games, I believe, than most other teams, but still.
But he didn't.
He looks so comfortable at the plate, even in 44-degree weather.
He doubled in the last at-bat of the first two games.
Yeah.
Wasn't like Japan helped him, is my point.
It wasn't like Japan helped him at all.
Yeah.
You're right. He did not do much there. And it was a good weekend at Wrigley. The home opener Friday was really cool.
Yes.
Showed a road to the occasion. It was a fun day at the ballpark, and you had a lot of things feeling good about if you're a Cub fan. And then yesterday, the late innings, they blew it.
I wonder the conversation, the tone of the conversation today, had they completed the second sweep, right?
Oh, yeah. That would have been really more upbeat.
Oh, it would have been a lot more upbeat.
And
but it's not, sadly.
It isn't. And it's only one game. You don't want to overreact. And we heard Jed say all that and certainly reinforce it's so early. It's so early. It needs months before you know what kind of team you have. But after 2 weeks, I think you know some things about this infield that you might not want to know.
The games on Saturday, the NCAA games, were really two excellent games.
Mm-hmm.
A remarkable comeback from Florida in the second half and a really interesting performance all the way around by Walter Clayton Jr. The man of the tournament. And then you get to the second game. And I don't know how many people were still up for it because it did start late and it felt just felt one-sided. It didn't feel like there was going to be a lot of controversy, as the Brits would say, regarding the finish. But goodness gracious, Duke bowing out the way they did. First of all, congratulations to Houston. They are a great defensive team, and if we can make the argument that they wore them down and they played every single possession like it mattered, blah, blah, blah. But Duke choked. There is no way around that fact that they just stopped scoring. And what was it? 21-8 was the run to end. They had one field goal in like the last 5 minutes of the game or something. It was incredible to watch. It was like, how is this happening? I'm watching that game, and I don't think anyone was still on our little text exchange, but I said, what has happened? I watched it unfold, and I couldn't believe it happened.
Well, Duke lost that game as much as Houston won it. And Kelvin Sampson certainly would argue that point.
Yes, he did.
And you give him credit for having the culture, the Houston culture, if you will, and that was evident. And they are on the precipice of something that they've never done in school history in a long time, so he's never done in his career. Good for him, but you can't get past what you just said. And, you know, Duke squandering that opportunity down the stretch, and unfortunately, and I think it is unfortunate, Cooper Flagg is the best player in college basketball. He has the awards and the hardware to prove it. He's going to be an exceptional NBA player for a very long time, franchise-type player. And his Duke career, unfortunately and unfairly, will be defined by the shot that he missed.
I got to tell you, a lot of people were wondering, what does his pro career look like? Is this going to be Christian Laettner? Is that what his career will look like? Is he going to be kind of a different version Kevin Love? Someone wrote, could he possibly be Danny Ferry? And I'm like, oh, boy.
Three Dukies, all different players. I think all different types in Cooper Flagg. I think this. What I said about him, the one missed shot, either defining him or lingering with his legacy for a very long time, I think that's undeniable. But I also don't think it has to define his NBA career. I don't think he has to go into the league known as a guy that can't hit the clutch shot. And I do think he's going to have a better career than a lot of the guys you mentioned.
All I want to say is it was a curious shot. It's a 15-foot fadeaway jumper from a man that's a pretty big attacking player.
But when he's hit before.
Oh, no, I understand that you take that shot from him, but he fronted it. He clearly was you know, he was slowing down as
you
the game went on.
You wanted him to be attacking the rim.
I just thought he might get a foul call there was a foul call on him that was questionable. They owed him one,
yeah.
Right?
Well, they did owe him one. That was a questionable call. I think that's a separate thing because that right. was a call that could have gone
either
Duke's way,
way
and then
yep.
didn't.
Right.
And it went against them, and that Houston took advantage. And you give credit to Houston for taking advantage.
No question.
But I think the final shot is one of those things where it's I know this didn't happen, but he's in the huddle and he tells John Shire, "I'll hit it. I'll make something happen," because he's done that so often throughout the course of the season.
John Shire did not cover himself in glory either because of the many elements that went wrong for Duke down the stretch.
Also true. Also true.
That's
and you
just
can't
the
get
reality
past that.
Of it. Yes.
You can't get past that. And I think that's the hard thing that they're going to have to live with. If you saw the post game ride on the golf cart from all
Holy
four
cow.
Of the guys from Duke who were a company, they looked like they were shell-shocked. And they were down the stretch. They were not equipped emotionally, mentally, however, intellectually, on the floor, during the timeouts. They were outplayed and outcoached down the last couple minutes, and that's why Houston is playing tonight. And it's unfortunate because how did you answer that? Because I think Cooper Flagg, his future, I think, remains, I don't want to say unaffected by what we saw on Saturday night, but I don't think there's going to be as tight of a connection between that failure and his NBA success.
Yeah, I listen, the guy's a really good player. He is the main man. I think we all know that. That's a reference to the state he's from. Weird to have a guy from Maine.
The main man.
But
that would be the headline in Chicago if the Bulls win the lottery.
You think he's going to fall that far?
I don't think he's going to fall at all. He's going to fall at
is
all.
Is he going to come back?
Well, that's the other element of this, because if you end your freshman season, which he was highly decorated and successful.
Won the Naismith.
And if you end it that way, you're 18 years old. If there was chatter about him maybe coming back because of the NIL realities, because of the money that he can still make at Duke, you wonder what effect that will have on his psyche.
If you were voting for the Naismith this morning, what would your vote be?
Oh, it'd be easy, because I'd factor in the tournament.
Well, it's something.
And it would be Walter Clayton Jr., who's done something that hasn't been done since Larry Bird was down in Terre Haute.
But what if Houston stops him tonight?
Then we'll have a conversation tomorrow, and we'll say, well, you know, what a great defensive effort that Kevin Sampson put together. Oh, Kelvin, know my name. Say it right.
He's going for his first title.
Yeah.
I believe he's 69. Is that right? Mm-hmm. He's not quite 70. That's pretty wild, isn't
it? It's really a great story.
It is a great story.
Look, I haven't always been the biggest Kelvin Sampson fan, but you do have to respect his ability to be consistent coaching. His teams are all alike.
Yeah.
They're all alike. They don't have the greatest offense necessarily. They don't have, but they all are defined by that defensive persistence and just, they come after you and they never stop and they never quit. And that's one thing they said. The Houston culture is you never quit. And they never did Saturday night, and it paid off.
No, pretty incredible.
So tonight, Houston and Florida, the Cooper Flagg conundrum, I think it is, whether to stay or go into the NBA draft is going to – I don't think he's put that to bed yet. I don't think that's going to be something that is worthy of discussion moving forward, because I'm not convinced 100% that he's entering the draft.
But it is interesting how Florida – came back and won in the second half against Auburn. Really, really won that game, but did so with what were they down? 8 at halftime? They came back and they did. Whereas the Duke thing, I mean, who saw that coming?
The Duke was a collapse.
That was a collapse.
I think
it was a colossal collapse, Mr.
It was. It was a colossal collapse. What you saw in, I feel like, Florida and Auburn was high level college basketball. And back and forth, and certainly Florida rose to the occasion because they're the best player on the court, even though Jani Broome might have been a little bit compromised.
Well, I'll tell you, he seemed pretty good in the first half. And then it was almost like he had used up a lot
of... He ran out of gas.
Because even the way that he was playing in the first half, and I've played a lot of these games on one-on-one basketball, where you're slightly bigger than someone, and you're just backing up and backing up,
yeah,
and giving yourself a short jumper. It was almost like that ruined him by the second half. He just couldn't do that anymore.
Well, he also spent a week.
He's got an elbow
nursing
problem.
His injury. Yes, he might not have practiced as much, and his conditioning might have been really affected by that.
Right.
He wasn't the best player on the court more often than Walter Clayton Jr. was.
Oh, he was so good.
And this guy has emerged now the player of the tournament. Certainly a future NBA. I think he's going to be a future NBA star. He's going to be one of those guys that you can get an automatic basket from anytime you need one. And tonight, I think he will be the guy that leads Florida to victory.
He's 6'3", though.
Yeah.
Just saying, just talking to NBA people, it's not that you can't be a future NBA star at 6'3". It's that he is 6'3".
Mm-hmm.
If he was 6'5 or 6'7, I think you could lock down that NBA star.
It could be difficult for him to overcome, but the game has become such a three-point shooting contest that you think that he'll find his way, and he'll see his openings, and he'll take advantage of those opportunities, because everybody, not just the Bulls, but the whole league has now become this three-point shooting club, and he's going to be a reason why teams play that way, and he's going to be a guy, I think, a player that thrives in that style.
Did you see that he reminds Screamin' Steven of Wade Cunningham of Detroit?
Did he say that?
He did. And he just, unfortunately, you can't really. I mean, you can misspeak, but you can't misspeak.
Well, if you're Stephen A. and you're that kind of a guy,
yeah,
every mistake or every time you misspeak, it's going to be magnified.
Yeah, it's tough.
I made the comp, too. I know he's not as big as Jamal Murray, but he's a guy that kind of reminds me of the Nuggets guard.
How big is
Pretty silky
Jamal,
smooth. I think he's 6'5".
Yeah, I
know.
I said
size is the size is something you're concerned about, but as fluid as he is shooting from distance, what are you laughing at?
Patrick has listed a ton of dookies that didn't make it in the NBA. I just think it's funny.
Well, there's that. It's like
there's
the Ohio State quarterback thing until C.J. Stroud. Every school has a kind of a legacy like that you look at and you wonder if one reminds you of the other for why is this pattern exist?
Right.
But Cooper Flagg, I think, is going to be a longtime NBA
and he also
all-star caliber player.
He was like 17 years old, and he was dominating in a NBA camp.
And he's still – that was a year ago.
Yeah.
He's 18.
Oh, I know. He's a young man.
So that was fun on Saturday night. You had all the Ovechkin stuff, I think, was interesting
was
to follow
great.
Over the weekend.
That was great. That
Friday
was
night was kind of
– Didn't you think he was going to score it on Friday night?
I was afraid he was going to score it.
He had a couple
I'm
shots.
So glad. I was so glad that he didn't.
You're so glad he was held to two?
Yes.
Because you scoffed at his prediction.
I did.
Of two.
I scoffed. It was an audible scoff.
Yeah.
I definitely scoffed. I did not want him to break the record against the Blackhawks.
But I mean, you didn't think he was going to score two.
I didn't think he was going to score two.
Yeah.
I thought that.
I mean, he got awful close.
He did. And the Hawks kind of let him get even closer.
Oh, my God. One went off the guy's shoulder. I'm not even sure he saw it, the goalie.
I'm so glad that we have Eddie O at 8:45 because he was there and he called it. And he can tell us what that was like to be in the building. It was a great moment. You know, even regardless of how you might feel about Ovechkin, he's such an unorthodox historical figure in hockey because this is not the guy. You look at his diet and he doesn't.
No.
Not one of these guys that takes care of himself
have one.
Necessarily.
It's beer. It's on his diet.
He looks like a guy that I could be coming in to be an executive to sit in the suite or the guy that's going to score all the goals. He doesn't look like he's in.
So it's like Luca hockey version, you know?
Yeah.
Michael Finley's going to go take a beer out of.
You know what? No, he wouldn't.
Ovi's hand.
Ovi wouldn't let him take the beer out of his hand.
Like, Ove's got more connection, I would say, to like Gordie Howe than he does to the great one.
Wayne Gretzky looks like he's in better shape than Ovechkin.
Wayne Gretzky was never like a fight. Like, I'm just saying, like, Gordie Howe would beat the hell out of you just out of habit. He was a fighter, and he was like a tough guy. He was kind of like Bobby Hull was.
Yeah.
Bobby Hull was always
He was reflective of that generation of hockey players.
Yes.
And he was a true representative.
Ove is a tough guy.
Yeah. Ovechkin's kind of the same way. He's definitely more Gordie Howe than Wayne Gretzky.
Yes.
And you can see that in the style of play. When I saw Gretzky yesterday handling himself as gracefully as he did, is there – and Pat Boyle asked this question. I think he posed – or he maybe made the statement on the CHSN postgame. There's not an ambassador in any sport any better than Wayne Gretzky.
He's stuck in a little bit of controversy over his feelings about the current U.S.
Fair
president.
Fair enough.
Just so you know.
Fair enough.
Maybe not as beloved in Canada.
Maybe
as
not
he
representing,
once was.
But that's not the comment. The statement wasn't representing his country.
Throw my hands up.
Because I know that's still part of the current day controversy or controversy, as you would say.
Controversy.
You look at, does anybody represent his sport any better than Wayne Gretzky as an ambassador? Post-career. It's hard to find somebody like that in either sport.
I love that guy. I told you my story about Gretzky when I had to do the back page story on him. I had arranged it, and then he had like a cousin who was in the Gulf War or something. Everyone in North America was trying to get a hold of him, and I'm sitting there like, I had arranged this thing. I'm not going to get the interview. I'm just nobody. And then he skates over to me. He's like, hey, give me 5 minutes and I'll give you all the time you need. And he came back and you wouldn't believe it. The guy, it was like, wait,
that's my point.
What's your favorite color?
Thank you.
But he was an ambassador.
That's my point.
Yeah, it's a good point.
That's a really good memory too. Oh, so there was a lot of stuff. Great big weekend of sports. And we have all day to talk about it. Mike DeCourcy is going to be fun because those games delivered for the people that were defending this tournament.
No question about it. All right. We got to get to all the stories of the weekend. We'll do that next in the Pick Six. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
I'm Jill, a registered dietitian. When I meet with patients, they usually think I'm going to tell them to throw out their favorite snacks. But don't worry, your Cheetos are safe. That's not how this works. I help my patients build healthier habits based on their lifestyle and goals without guilt or restriction. Nourish connects dietitians like me with people like you who are ready to take control of their health. Your appointments could be fully covered through your insurance since 94% of Nourish patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw.
where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Which of the Chicago baseball teams suffered the worst defeat on Sunday, the White Sox or the Cubs? Does the fact that the Cubs managed to win two games to open the series against the Padres from San Diego make their loss a little easier? Or is the Sox status as likely 100-plus game losers make every loss, no matter how late, somehow expected?
I don't know that you had to roll losers over like four beats there, buddy. But I think the Cubs' loss was easier to take because they had beaten the Padres twice and they were going for a sweep. I think they had the sweep, and they should have gotten the sweep, but I think that that was less painful than the White Sox getting swept themselves and managing to kind of fall apart to do so. But that's just me looking at it. I think that it is true that the Sox are going to lose 100 games, so I think they lose another series, whoop-de-doo. I'm sure a lot of people aren't even paying attention to it. I told you I'd like to see the Sox be able to win a game series and somehow get to whatever it would add up to, 55 to 57 losses.
I think when you answer this, you can answer it a couple different ways, right? You're either from the Cubs fan perspective or the Sox fan perspective or just the baseball perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So from that standpoint, I'll say this. The Cubs, you were like, oh my gosh, in the first inning. Then you're like, oh my gosh, in the first inning. Then Kyle Tucker hits a home run and you're thinking, oh, okay. Just like kind of comfy, easy Sunday afternoon. And then the bullpen, which you think has been rebuilt. Well, it has been rebuilt. But the question is, do the Cubs, the people that build these things for the Cubs, know what they're looking at when it comes to bullpens? It seems like they don't. The bullpen, not very good. And when we get to the point when the Cubs and White Sox play each other, I think it's early May this time around. who's got the better bullpen? It might be neither, right? Which one is worse? But from a baseball standpoint, I mean, wow, the Sox had a 2-run lead and then blew it, and walks killed both bullpens yesterday. So very tough, but from this Cubs fan standpoint, there's more expectations on the north side than the south side, so I'm going to go with the Cubs.
I tend to agree with that. The Cubs bullpen, if it has been rebuilt, you fear it's been rebuilt with faulty parts.
Mm.
You've got Eli Morgan that had the meltdown in Arizona. That's been the defining appearance for him. Ryan Pressly, two out of three games against the Padres, very shaky, huge Craig Kimbrel vibes again. Don't know what the problem is there, but it doesn't seem like the command is present. Didn't bring that with him from Houston. And it harkened back to, remember before they traded for him, didn't he have to have assurances that he would be the ninth inning guy? Didn't he want those assurances that I'm going to close games? What do you do now? Because if Porter Hodge is a better option, and maybe he isn't. I don't know if the closer is on this team. Because Zach Zaidman talked to Jed Hoyer before Sunday's game, and Jed made a great point about bullpens. He said the guys who might contribute the most might not even be in the organization yet. Might not be on this roster yet. So I think Cubs, even though Sox, they're up 3-1. Martin Perez deserved better. Why did you go to the Clevinger in the seventh? I thought he was the closer. I thought Mike Clevinger was the closer. They didn't have a need for a closer up until Sunday. But now we found out they don't really have one. Do they know what they have? I know what they have. Problems. Lots of them. Because that bullpen can't get anybody out either. Who is this guy that they went to in the ninth inning to close out the eighth? I don't know. I don't know who these pitchers are necessarily. So because the Sox are kind of playing as inconsistently and they're limited, you look at the roster, I think the Cubs were more disappointing because they had you thinking, after coming back from being down 3-0, that they were going to sweep the Padres, and they didn't.
Wow. You know, that's a scary good question, right?
Voice of Bruce Levine. He's with you guys at 8:25. What's the bigger story of the Cubs coming out of the weekend? They won a series from the Padres, one of the best teams in baseball, or closer Ryan Pressly, who had two shaky outings so far. How much did Craig Counsell not replacing Justin Turner at first base late contribute?
Well, it contributed a lot because the ball found the bad fielder, as it so often does. That's baseball. That's baseball, Craig. You don't replace Justin Turner, you're going to pay for it. Cubs defensively, that's the thing of it. Before the ninth inning, you thought, okay, this sweep is going to reveal that this Cub team is all about speed. They can run. Defense with Ian Happ having the catch of the year on Saturday. In this series,
can we talk about that?
We got plenty of time to talk about that. He deserves in his 1,000th game to be talked about. Defense and speed were going to be what we're going to be talking about. And then they blow it at first base and Pressly can't get anybody out. And I worry about the back end of that bullpen because this feels like last year. And you fear of how many blown saves are we looking at this year? And what is Mason Miller's deal in Sacramento? Is he unhappy in that park as some people seem to be? Can you trade for him, Jed? You might have to start thinking these things because this bullpen, I know it's April 7th. I can read a calendar. But you come out of winning 2 out of 3 against the Padres and you should feel better about the Cubs, and I just don't.
Yeah, I'd like to feel better. Now, we've had 2 Sundays in a row for the Cubs that have not gone well.
True.
Right? The Cubs could have 2 more wins. They could be 9-3 right now.
Now they're going to win 5 in a row?
Instead of 7-5.
Like they did last week?
Right. I mean, now the Rangers come to town. But, like, here, at one point, Craig Counsell talks about you can't have that many walks and blames the walks. And walks will kill you. We all know that in baseball. But then he's like, well, but Ryan Pressly, you know, induced the ground ball for the double play and we couldn't come up with it. Well, how about if there's not that guy on base that Ryan Pressly decided to walk, right? I mean, so which one is it, Craig? Right? And, again, if you're gonna give Michael Bush the day off, then give him the day off. But if you decided to make him put his cleats on and have a pinch hit at bat, then also have him go play defense.
You know, I thought the Cubs had a good weekend, honestly. I thought winning their home opener was a big deal, and then following up the next day. I really thought they were going to win on Sunday. I was kind of watching a lot of different things, but I was following the game and I was going back and forth. I was kind of stunned at the way that thing broke down. And I get it. I understand what the issues are with Ryan Pressly and where they're at. I guess the thing that I enjoyed over the weekend was that offense is real. You know, you came out of the A's series where they scored 35 runs in 3 games and you're like, wow, what's going to happen when they get home against a good team that can also pitch a little bit? And they didn't catch their best pitchers, and I'm not implying that. I'm just saying they seem to steadily have a pretty good offense. When you go down 3-0 in the first inning and your guy can't seem to find the strike zone, and then you come right back and take a 5-3 lead, that was pretty good. And it was good to see King Tuck, as David likes to call him, get his first home run at Wrigley. I thought that was pretty cool and a good moment. And it was a no-doubter. I mean, he
got all of it.
Oh, he cracked.
He got all of it, didn't he?
There was no back needed in that one, right? So I think that is something to take away from the last 2 series, and it makes you feel better about them than you did when the season started. Let's put it that way. So I think the offense seems pretty real. And they got to get that bullpen tightened up. And we've talked about this. It's almost like a living, breathing entity that changes as the year goes on. We don't know what the solution is in the bullpen, but they will find one. And it might be with someone who's not even on the roster right now.
Remind me, we need to get back to Ian Happ, as Dustin wants to talk about. We need to talk about Vlad Guerrero's contract and Kyle Tucker.
Yeah. I thought he had a deadline.
And I remember the question was,
Mike DeCourcy talking College Hoop 725 with Mully and Haw. After watching the second national semifinal of the NCAA tournament, were you asking yourself how Houston won or how Duke lost? Was the ending 21-8 run by Houston, which trailed by six with 1:11 left, a choke job by Duke? Who choked more, Naismith winner Cooper Flagg or local guy made good John Shire?
Wow. That's mean-spirited.
That's rough, man.
Who wrote that
question?
That's rough. Is that you?
No.
Why don't you like Shire?
Why do you have to reveal that?
It's a 50-50. It's one or the other.
Yeah. Unless, Dustin, did you
I am not allowed to write
questions
for this.
That's a mean question, actually.
That's awful. I think it was a choke job, I'll be honest with you. I think now you can say that Houston never quit. They never, you know, for a second believed they weren't going to win, blah, blah, blah. I think that in order to lose that game, Duke had to really let themselves down, and they did. Missed free throws, front-end free throws. Were there three steals in that last sequence of the game, that 21-8? It was like there was a lid on the basket, man. They just stopped being able to score, and they stopped being able. I mean, if I had bet on Duke or cared about Duke, I think it would have been a super frustrating game to watch because they had total control right up to the point where they didn't. And even when Houston came back, it seemed like it was too far. Were they up 15 at one point? It was ridiculous. To give and someone said, you know, the problem was at the end of the game, they're used to being up 20. They didn't know what to do. The problem was they did nothing. And, I'm a big John Shire guy. I like him. That is a coaching moment, man. You got to be able to call a timeout. You got to be able to call a play that will score. You got to be able to stop a run. And you got to be able to substitute. And, you know, it made me wonder, like someone said, there was a story earlier in the day that apparently the South Sudan, like they've got a 7-2 center from the South Sudan. And this kid, apparently the U.S. has announced they're pulling passports on all these kids from South Sudan. They're no longer going to recognize the passport because they tried to send six or seven guys back that the country refused to take. And so they're now really angry about it. And this kid's draft status could be in question because he may have to leave the country. I mean, was that on his mind? Was that on their mind? What happened? How did they fall apart at the end of that game? Are we really supposed to believe that Houston's great defense wore them out and there was nothing they could do at the end of the game because they had been beaten pretty steadily by a bunch of, you know, five-year seniors? I don't know what conclusion we're supposed to have, but that was rough, man. That was a bad way to lose. And I think anybody who watched it was stunned.
Absolutely stunned. Duke definitely choked. There were 8 minutes and 17 seconds to go, and Duke was up 59-45. And I turned to somebody that I was watching the game with. I said, Duke's just flexing on him right now. And that was it. I mean,
you're the one who said,
59-45. And then it went from 59-45 to 59-55 with 3:44 to go. So you're talking 8 minutes. They couldn't score. Nothing would fall. Turnovers left and right. We had the weird foul call near the end of the game, too, that was not – I mean, in the first game, Auburn and Florida, they were beating the heck out of each other.
Yeah.
They were letting everything go at one point. And then the refs got way too involved in that game. But Duke choked, bottom line. Duke choked, and I blame more the coach than I do Cooper Flagg. And I thought it was very interesting how many times we saw Coach K picked up on by the directors over at CBS.
I hate the word choke. I just do. But I do think it's understandable because it's used so often. And in this context, there aren't many other creative ways to describe what happened. And it's easy to agree on this. Duke lost the game more than Houston won it. And Kelvin Sampson may argue that point, but Duke was tight, and then they lost their composure, and that was on the court and on the bench. I don't know why that was the only game in the tournament where I asked myself, how many timeouts do they have left? And why aren't they calling one now? There was no attempt, obviously, to stem the tide of the momentum that Houston was creating, and it became an avalanche that Duke just couldn't stop. So there was a lot going on, and as much what Duke didn't do as contributed more than what Houston did do. Give them credit. Is it the oldest team in the tournament?
Yeah.
Are they older than the Rockets? I mean,
they're old.
Was Hakeem Olajuwon watching, or is he on the end of the bench?
Well, also not allowed to get on the court.
Yeah, exactly. Was it Auburn the oldest team?
Yeah, that might be. But Houston has a lot of experience, and Duke defined by freshmen, and they look like a bunch of young guys that weren't ready for their moment.
Right.
And so, as a result, they became the only team, according to OptiStats, to have an NCAA tournament game with a higher field goal percentage, more free throws attempted, more assists, fewer turnovers, and more steals, and lose for the first time in 335 games.
Wow.
And that's just an amazing statistic. Yeah,
335 games. So that's what they were up against. That's what they couldn't overcome. And it was their own loss of composure that led to the biggest loss of the tournament.
I don't know if that answered the question.
The head coach, Billy Donovan of your Bulls. What did you make of Kobe White's big game for the Bulls? 37 points, including 6 three-pointers. Seventh game of 30-plus since the All-Star break. Do you expect that from him now?
You do. Kobe White has been really consistent, and he's one of those guys now moving into next year. You wonder what status he is ascended to. Kendall Gill, I think, called him one of the best guards in the NBA, and he has played like one since the beginning of March. I really liked what the Bulls did yesterday. That was a good way to start the day of Chicago sports that saw all four teams playing. They didn't blow it down the stretch. They didn't have any issues, and they did step forward, and I think, I don't want to say, it sounds kind of maybe high school-ish, but I think that they wanted to win this game for Billy Donovan because Billy Donovan had such a great weekend. He was on Friday night, they went at home. On Saturday, he's down there inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. And he's in San Antonio standing next to Mike Krzyzewski, Julius Erving, Carmelo Anthony. And Billy Donovan belongs as the head coach at Florida. He won back-to-back national championships. And he was honored for doing and having such a great career, 500 victories as a college coach. Comes back Sunday, goes to Carolina. They win that game, and they douse him afterward. That was a lot of fun. So Kobe White stepped up big. That's what we expect. Billy Donovan has done a great job coaching this year, but especially since the trade.
I think Kobe, you have to – with this current Bulls team, I mean, 30 is a lot, and kudos to him for doing it. But I think 25 is kind of the – he's got to score 25 if they're going to win a game. I think if he's under 25, that means he's ice cold. And then the question is, like, can Vooch or Giddey pick up the slack in that situation? But, he's been unbelievable. He has worked his tail off. He really has. He has worked his tail off. And it was a homecoming game for him. He's from the Carolinas.
Always great in Carolina.
Right, so yeah. He really wanted to put on a show.
Yeah, you're right about that. He always plays well in Carolina, but he's been playing so well. There's a reason he's Eastern Conference Player of the Month, and you're right. He's getting better and better as the year is going on. I think there's a couple things I kind of expect every time I watch the Bulls. I think that Kobe's going to be flirting with 30 points, and I think that Giddey's going to be flirting with a triple-double. And just close, you know, just going to – going to fill up the scorecard on a lot of those elements. And, you know, I think they're playing with the consistency that I wouldn't have expected from them. Now, I believe the Atlanta Hawks won last night, right? There was some talk earlier in the afternoon if the Bulls could somehow get to the eighth seed, but they've lost They've lost the tiebreaker to Atlanta, so they would have to finish ahead of Atlanta. They couldn't be even with them. So I think Atlanta...
They're currently one game back of the Hawks.
Yeah, one game.
So there's, what, four games left? They would have to win all four and hope that Atlanta kind of went whatever, 500. That would be the only way that they could... move up to
but
eight.
Kind of fun, right? Like, we're scoreboard watching right now in the NBA.
It is kind of fun, I have to admit.
I mean, that yesterday,
I think we've accepted that they're going to be in the play-in, so we've abandoned the idea that Cooper Flagg could help.
Yeah, there's no hashtag Buzelis
is the yeah. How about Buzelis on Friday night? That was great when he had a shake three-pointer.
How about that?
And then he comes down and hits a three on the other side. And I saw the post-game, KC's asking Giddey a question about it, and Giddey talked about how confident you have to be when you're a rookie to miss, to airball a three, and then have the cojones to take it from the other side and nail it.
And he does have that element to his game.
He had a couple monster
dunks
in that game.
He's not shy.
The double clutch dunk.
Yeah, how about that?
It's awesome.
It also makes you wonder, after Cooper Flagg missed, would Matas have made that shot?
Matas would have beaten him one-on-one by the stock.
Kendall Gill thinks he would have.
Yes, he does.
That's a great question.
Bears players return to Halas Hall today, the official beginning of their offseason program. In past years, there has been news of day one about players who didn't show up for contract reasons, health issues, or otherwise. Do you expect or care to guess on anything newsy happening? Some coaches look at today as the true beginning of 2025 season. Will Ben Johnson?
I got to tell you, if I'm a player, I'm showing up, right? So if someone doesn't want to show up, if there is some sort of a impasse with somebody, this is the way to create a problem for yourself. It's a new administration. They are judging you for the first time. I would recommend that people show up, play hard, and stay away from any nonsense. Because, you know, you only get the one chance to make a first impression. And Ben Johnson said to get comfortable being uncomfortable, and I think that the idea is to make people uncomfortable, and that'll probably start with the quarterback. I'll be very curious to see how it goes. I'm not saying, you know, and I don't know who it would be. If somebody's unhappy that their contract, if, you know, Gordon didn't like that they haven't gotten that deal done, and maybe I don't think he's not going to turn up. I think everybody that needs to be there needs to be there. And I think that, like I said, with a new coaching staff and new people in place, don't mess around.
I believe Ben Johnson will be keeping tabs on who's there and who's not. But, Molly, when you say you made a comment, and I'd like to follow up really quick, everyone that needs to be there, so is there someone, like, I wouldn't be shocked if we heard a couple of defensive starters not there, just because.
Like who?
Jalen Johnson.
Wow, I knew you were going to say
well,
that.
Well, but again, he has. Okay, that's stereotypical. Why?
I knew you were going to say Jalen Johnson because that's the guy you assume is going to have something come up because he's missed these kinds of things before.
Right. He has. Thank you. Because that's the reason why. And now he's given good reasons why he's missed. He's got a young daughter that lives in California.
Everybody's got good reasons.
He lives. I'm just saying. So what's an okay reason? You know, where do you draw the line? I expect every single starter on offense to be there today and be there the whole time, every second. You know, I don't want to hear, as an example, our guy, DJ Moore. Okay, DJ Moore was at the Cubs home
opener.
Cub
game
with Cole Kmet.
He better be there today.
Right, that's my point. So I like the fact that he's embracing Chicago as his home, right? As a Bear. But I don't want to hear now, like, it's his kid's spring break.
You know, DJ,
so he went
DJ
somewhere
was
else.
At the news conference introducing the coach.
And who wasn't there?
Who wasn't there? Remind me.
I don't believe Jalen Johnson was there.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I just said that a couple seconds ago.
He had to take his daughter to school.
Okay. I just think defensive guys may not show up, and they should.
Okay, so...
funny.
There are guys who may not show up. If I were to predict, and I'm not predicting anything, but I guess I am, I want to know where this TJ Edwards thing is going. I think he might want a new deal. And if he is a guy that he's earned that kind of respect and he has been a guy that they have maybe overlooked. And if they're not even close on any kind of contract negotiation heading into his final season about an extension, then maybe that's one guy to keep an eye out on. I hope everybody is there. TJ Edwards is a consummate pro. He's the ideal teammate. It makes sense for him to show up and just keep on plugging along, because this is a team that could be going places this year in their mind. Ben Johnson's going to deliver that message today. But today is when it all starts. And new coaches look at it that way. Mike Vrabel, heck, they traded a guy, Joe Milton, because they wanted to clear the decks and have from day one everything being about the quarterback, Drake May. That may be a little bit drastic of an example, but it shows you how these new coaches who are able to start early, the Jets, the Patriots, and the Bears today, open up their offseason program. They're getting going. They're approaching this like they're playing week one on Sunday, because that's the kind of intensity I think Ben Johnson will bring to his opening address. And I love it because it's football season.
It's a good point, though. It is a voluntary camp.
Voluntary.
Yep.
Air quotes.
That's right. All right, 3-1-2-6.
We got one more.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Classic.
I was ready to go to the extra point.
I want to get to the extra point, too. But the Blackhawks avoided the
ignominy
of being the team Alex Ovechkin broke the record against Friday night when Ovi scored twice. But apparently, Ovi passed up a chance to break Gretzky's record on an empty net goal.
Right side to Wilson, centered up. Ovechkin has it, he scores! He scores! Alex Ovechkin scores 895! There's a new goal-scoring champion, and his name is Alexander Ovechkin! He has done it here on Long Island! His teammates mob him! There is but one! Alexander the greatest to ever do it in National Hockey League history!
Caps Radio Network, thank you for the call. Were you glad he did pass up that empty net chance, or did you want to see it Friday night?
I did not want to see it Friday night. I'm glad that the Hawks were not part of the ignominy, the public shame or disgrace of that moment, because it would have lasted and lingered forever.
I mean, what was that word?
You don't need to, it was a good word. It was the right word.
It was the correct word.
It was the word they avoided, and I'm glad they did. You didn't want to be on that highlight reel. You don't want to be part of that history. He got two goals against you. That was bad enough. He's 39 years old. I know he is who he is, but come on. So he got it yesterday. It was a great moment. Can't wait to talk to Eddie O about it. He deserves all the praise. He's the best goal scorer in NHL history, but he's not the best player in NHL history. I would beg to differ with that. It'd be a good debate.
I did predict on Friday during the show that he would score and score two-plus goals at plus 467.
Pity you didn't bet it.
Yeah. I did bet it.
No,
yeah,
you
but
didn't.
You did a really silly parlay that we could talk about later. We're talking about Ian Happ. Yeah.
Seven-leg parlay.
Again, if you felt he was going to hit, how much was it going to pay?
I bet three whole dollars, and it was going to pay 65 and change.
And you lost it because a Clipper didn't score any points?
No.
Correct.
What if you had just bet him?
It was plus 467 to have two-plus goals.
So just stay there.
If I had to bet $100 to win the 467.
Oh.
Help.
What ignominy?
Yeah, you know, not knowing the word is
ignominy.
Is ignominy. Publicly shaming yourself by saying you don't know it.
That is just a great Scrabble word, right, David?
It's a great Scrabble word.
Instead of choke.
The Y with the 4 points? Yes.
Ignominy.
Ignominy.
Thank you, Siri.
It's Siri. It's Siri.
Her too.
Okay. Thank you, Siri.
Ducks and geese and big better hurry when I take you out in a Surrey. When I take you out with a Surrey with the fringe on top. He's going Oklahoma on you.
Oh, wow.
Surrey.
Okay.
Wow, that's a new one. That's a new one. That's a new pronunciation. Congratulations. Oh, she's answering. I kind of wanted him to get it. I'll be honest with you. I thought it was pretty cool. I was watching that game. It was late, and I was sitting there, and I was texting with a friend of mine, and I'm watching that game, and I'm like, and then the Bulls finished afterwards. So I had watched some of the Bulls game, and then I went to the Blackhawks, and I watched almost all the third period. It was exciting thinking he was going to get it, and I thought it would have been kind of cool. And I, you know, I am. I'm only worried about the great one. And I didn't like the idea that he had to follow this guy around much longer. So I appreciate Wayne making the effort, and he was there. And I loved when he finally broke it, and they had the ceremony. The tape that came out, including Mike and LeBron. Yeah. I thought that was great.
That was really cool.
I was very confused why Vince Vaughn was in it. Steve Carell. I just thought. I mean, are they friends with him? There were some choices on that confused me a little bit. I just thought they were more. And I don't want to be mean about it, but I didn't think. Like, if you could get De Niro, you know, then have De Niro. It should have been only the best of the best, right?
At least it wasn't Putin.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That would have been really something. And it would have been probably appropriate. Now I didn't want him to get it. We got the extra point next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Ignominy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Can you please predict the winner of tonight's championship game? Will it be a high-scoring or a low-scoring contest? What is Florida's path to victory? And if Houston's going to cut down the nets, how are they going to do it?
This is must-watch television. It is every Monday night, the first Monday in April. I don't know if this was the matchup that maybe the network executives were longing for. No Cooper Flagg, no Duke, not as many eyeballs.
No.
So the ratings will not reflect that, but I don't care about ratings. I mean, they really, if you're interested, you're interested, and you don't have to explain why. But this is going to be a slog if Houston wins, and it will be a display of great shot making if Florida does. I believe that Houston will want to muck it up as much as they can. They'll come at you relentlessly and in waves, and they play tremendously hard for a team that doesn't go more than eight deep. That's a credit to how hard Kelvin Sampson gets his players to play. They only go eight deep, and you would think that they have waves and waves of depth, but they don't. I think ultimately that might catch up with them. Florida's got to protect the basketball more than they did on Saturday, where they had 16 turnovers and won anyway. Walter Clayton Jr. will be the guy that hits the big shots down the stretch. He has done what only Larry Bird has done in having more than 30 points in consecutive games in the Elite Eight and the Final Four. It is his one shining moment. He will be the star of the show, and it will be Florida 75, Houston 71.
Ooh, nice tight game. So you've got Florida covering the one, and you've got it going over the total then. The total's 141. I think Houston is also going to win. Not going to win this game unless they can equal that turnover. I mean, that's what it's going to all be about. I mean, how many times can they force a turnover, and what can they do when they do force the turnover? I think like Florida in the first half is a great bet. I think Florida by one is a great bet. I actually like under. I think it's 70-60. That's my prediction. Florida 70, Houston 60.
Well, I had to predict the score of the imaginary Florida-Duke game, and I had it 82-77. So I suppose I should lower it to 72-67. just in keeping with Houston. Now the team that they're playing. Listen, this isn't that hard a game to figure out. If you are a Calvin Sampson, you don't let Walter Clayton Jr. beat you, period, end of story. You make someone else beat you. Doesn't mean that they can't. Doesn't mean that they won't get great performances from some of the big men that Florida have. But I think that you would take your defense, and they play really good defense, and you just don't let Walter Clayton be the guy that wins the game. So I would make sure he's not the star of the game. I think Walter Clayton Jr. has been the best star in the tournament. And I think that, as you say, to have matched Larry Bird, and let's be honest, he exceeded Larry Bird, right? Because he had 34 and 37 in the game.
In terms of totals.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yes. But Larry Bird was kind of a one-man gang in that.
He was.
In 79. So it's a pretty extraordinary. And then I read that they're like, everyone's like, he only averaged 14 points a game in Iona or something. I just thought it was so funny. That's how he got out of there.
Seems like such a long time ago.
Yeah.
He looks like a
completely different dude.
You can call him the best transfer ever?
If they win tonight. That's fair. Although, you know, did you see Loyola's Jaden Dawson has left school? He's going to Kansas.
Well, he's going to be the second.
If he plays for Kansas and they get to a Final Four next year, Dawson could be that guy.
Always at Loyola.
I have to spin it by the Ramblers. But, no, I really think that Walter Clayton Jr. is the best player in this tournament, and it's going to come down to whether or not he can get his. And I don't think he needs 30. I think if he's 25, they'll win the game. But I think that Houston's game plan is going to be make sure he's not the guy that beats you, and Florida is make sure the ball's in his hand, especially if you need a late shot.
I just have a hard time with that Larry Bird history that Walter Clayton Jr. is the first player since Bird. There have been some other great individual performances.
To get 30, there are players that have gotten 30 twice in the tournament, but not in the Elite Eight.
I know. Even at that stage,
and then
though.
The Final
Four. Guys, like Kemba Walker, he had a great run a couple of years ago.
Right. I was so surprised by that number.
Yeah, it also implies that Florida is more of a one-man team than they are.
They don't seem like it.
No, I think they got three good guards, and they got some good size, and they got a guy that we don't want to mention why, but apparently there was some elbow in the face of some relative years ago. And there was
he was heavily involved late in that game.
Oh, he's a player, man.
He was heavily involved.
Thomas Hauck.
Yeah.
Don't call me Haw.
Will you now be David Hauck?
If they win tomorrow, it's going to be Mully and Hauck. If they win tonight, it'll be tomorrow. Mully and Hauck, 5:30 to 10.
All right, here's hoping. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
0-2-1, Kyle Tucker. Tucker had an RBI single his first time. He drives one in the air. Deep right field. It's got a chance. Gone. Kyle Tucker with a home run to right. His first at Wrigley Field as a member of the Cubs. And the Cubs now open up a 7-3 lead.
That is the Great Clip of the Week, brought to you by Great Clips. Go to Great Clips for your next haircut. It's gonna be great. Mully and Haw here on the Score. And I thought of you, David. I knew you'd be pleased with that. And I saw him also saying after the fact that, you know, it would have been great if it wasn't in a lot. Like, he kind of regretted that it wasn't in a win.
He had the right thing to say.
That's correct.
That's what you want to hear.
Yep.
And Kyle Tucker has delivered everything you want to see so far. 15 hits, 15 runs batted in, 5 home runs. His OPS is 1.202. And so everything about Kyle Tucker is what you expected. And I wonder, in light of, and this could be the new way of looking at this, I don't know, maybe you don't want to talk about the future. The present is fun right now, but everything about Kyle Tucker, is he a rental, or is this going to be a rent-to-own type of situation for the Cubs? Vlad Guerrero Jr. just signed a 14-year, $500 million contract. That's the extension.
Wow.
So that's the price tag. Forget the years for a second, because I think nobody really expects him to be playing in 14 years. It's a $500 million guarantee. to Vlad Guerrero Jr., who's 26 years old, 2 years younger than Kyle Tucker. He's got 160 homers in 6 seasons. Kyle Tucker has 130 in 7. Kyle Tucker's career WAR is higher than Vlad Guerrero Jr., but they're comparable in that they both are franchise-type players. If you're Tom Ricketts and you're seeing this contract, does that look like an invitation or something that you resist the idea of pursuing?
That's a really good question. I think that, you know, I'd like to have some sort of answer about labor certainty. I wouldn't want to be paying a guy $500 million and then find out that we're not going to play a year.
That's a fair point. That. Why do the Blue Jays feel compelled, or did they worry about that? That didn't stop them.
Well, I think that the Blue Jays, as I recall, isn't there a plane with Ohtani on it heading to Toronto? Like, they thought they were going to get Shohei Ohtani, and I think they've tried to make some big jumps before, and here's a guy that was ready to leave, and people thought he might come here. Thought there was match to be made.
But I think that's a good memory and a good point. But you're talking about the Blue Jays' ambition. And why should we accept the fact that the Toronto's ambition is greater than Chicago's? It's not because it's a bigger market.
No.
It's not because they have more access to finances. I think if you're a Cub fan, you look at that deal and you wonder if it's the blueprint for Kyle Tucker's.
Well, I think the problem is, if you're a Cub fan, you look at them not being one of the final teams trying to get Shohei Ohtani, and then you look at them with a guy like Bregman being the fourth team. You know, he wasn't the first team. He was the fourth team.
Yeah. He had quite a night last night, too. But I think that it's – is it too early to be looking at these things? I don't know if it is or it isn't.
I don't think it is. I don't think it's too early at all. But I do think, David, that do you believe they're going to cough – in the way that that what just happened in Toronto?
I don't either. I don't.
So I'm not going to say that, oh, yeah, well, now they know what the price is and they're going to jump.
But I don't want to also fall into that. It's not a trap, but because I don't expect them to do that, does that mean I have to not hope that they will?
Or find
a pathway that they could?
It means
Try to keep that conversation going, because I do think it's the best thing long-term for them, because Kyle Tucker is one of those kind of players.
It means you let the horses out of the barn. You don't hold back any emotion. You commit fully. And then when your heart's broken, your friends will pick you up.
I love you, man.
We'll be here for you, buddy. All right. 312-644-6767. Your dime, your dance floor. What do you feel like getting to? There's so many good subjects going on. If you want to talk about King Tuck, we can do that. We got people who want to talk about the tournament. We can do that. The national championship game is tonight. We're going to get to everything. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.